This is Radio Influence. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to this Tuesday, June 5th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Busy weekend and of news and notes. We've got those up on our daily notebooks that we tell you about every podcast that we have on LandryFootball.com. If you're not yet a member, take advantage of it now. We think it's a great opportunity for you. This time of year may be a little slow in some people's eyes because there are no games. However, with the previews, breaking down of rosters in the college and NFL level, got so much planned for June and July to get you ready for the football season, as well as the daily notebooks that give you the updated information. So check us out if you're not yet a member of LandryFootball.com. We've got our summer savings special where you can get all the summer roster analysis, team previews, daily notebooks, the college and NFL scene by getting 50% off any subscription package by using the coupon code SUMMER, S-U-M-M-E-R. Do it today and have the football season locked up for our lowest rate ever. Limited time only. So take advantage of the price hike and get it now. We've got another special member of the LandryFootball.com family that we're going to tell you about. Guys, you're going to really love this coming up in a little bit. Got a bunch of questions. Folks, we've got so many questions. We'll get to three. I think we'll get to about four of them today. And we've got four or five of them we're going to get to on Thursday. So we appreciate Matt and Jacob and Kevin and the rest of the guys that have sent in the questions, and remind you that if you got a question you want addressed here in the Landry Football Podcast, send it to us. Send in the contact information on the website, and we'll address it. Anything involving football, the strategy and whatnot. So we're going to get to that. Hey, in our X's and O's segment, we're going to talk a little bit about something that it's been mentioned to me, and I want to make sure that we do this in a way that people understand, and we don't want to certainly talk down to anyone that's not from the football background, but we also want to try to educate as best as we can. So I'm going to go through some things, and it'll probably take a couple of days. We'll probably spend today and Thursday doing it, break down a few of them. Some basic scouting and coaching terminology. I'm going to talk a little bit about it. So did you have an understanding of what it is? So that you have it's like anything, like math or English or what have you. It's once you learn the basics, then you can kind of build upon that. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk a little bit about the top college football units this year. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the most important stats in college football in the NFL. We're going to get into that. And we've got a cute little rest of the story for you today. But want to start with some of the scouting and coaching terminology that we try to talk a little bit. Some of it is common sense. So, again, we don't want to, if it's something you're familiar with or maybe you get better familiarized with it, great. If it's something that you don't know, it gives you a better feel for it. But want to talk a little bit about terms and a little bit about certain things that I think are very useful as building blocks before we get into more and more X's and O's through the rest of the summer. And we talk a little bit about around draft time about agility versus speed numbers and what you do in workouts. And certainly everyone says, well, how does a guy look on film? Well, how fast a guy looks on film, we give him grades for that. But when we're evaluating a player, how he looks on film is relative to who he's doing it against. So you have to understand that a guy's going to look fast or slow relative to who he's doing it against. You've got to know the speed of everybody. This is why we time guys and put them through workouts in addition to the film, because it tells us things that the film doesn't tell us. It brings a different light to it. So one of the ways that we do it, and this is repetitive from the scouting draft time and the scouting segments I did for you here leading up to the draft, you take the 40-yard time of a player and you subtract 0.05, and that's what the short shuttle should be. If it's slower, then he's faster than quick. If it's faster, then he's quicker than fast. So it is a good way to indicate agility versus speed. And I am kind of looking at some of these terminologies. I tried to jot them down alphabetically as much as possible. We talk about the alley. When we throw that out, I think people throw it out. And what is it? Well, it's the hole to run through. And it's usually with blocks, not only at the line of scrimmage, but under the second level. That's what we call an alley. I mean, obviously we know what an alley is, but in a football term is when you create that alley with blocks or a vacation of the defense with formation, but it's creating a hole to run through at both the first and second level. The belly play, you hear that. It's a running back in which two backs attack different holes, often with a fake handoff before or after the rear one. So you don't hear much about the belly play. It's not as common today. But you want to know what the belly is. It's two backs attacking different holes. The blast, it's also called the ISO play, which is short for isolation. And the blast, the ISO is an inside running play in which the ball carrier follows the fullback who blocks the middle linebacker one-on-one. So that's the isolation. We talk a little bit about body lean. Body lean is a standard ball carrier's position, pitch slightly forward, shoulder pads centered above the knees. Proper body lean keeps the pad level low and the momentum moving forward. That's why it is so important we talk about getting good body lean. Bubble. Talk a little bit about that, and I use that a lot, and I'm guilty of it and not referring to it. What is the bubble? It refers to the yards between the first and second level defenders. And so when you got a bubble, you got a gap between the first and second level defenders. Cloud coverage is corner support coverage. It's when you high-low the number one receiver is what you basically refers to. Combination block. It's a block on one defender carried out in unison by two offensive linemen. Pretty simple there. A cut block is a block thrown below the knees. Counterplay is a generic term for any play in which the running back starts one way, then changes direction, usually with blockers pulling or trapping. Pulling is they're vacating their position. So let's use the left guard, for example. He's the left guard. Obviously, he's lined up on the left side of the center, right? Well, he vacates that position. Okay, he pulls out, literally pulls out of the line, gets parallel, and runs to the right side or to the left. But in this case, let's call it the right side. That's pulling. Trapping is when you allow a defender purposely to come forward in an effort to get another defender a better angle to block him. A counter is a generic term for any play in which the running back starts one way, then changes direction. It's usually with the blockers pulling or trapping. It could also mean two backs moving in different directions, at the snap. The counter tray, undoubtedly heard about that. I mean, famous by the Redskins of Joe Gibbs, is a classic misdirection running play where the running back takes three steps in one direction, then reverses the field before receiving the handoff. Okay. So he heads in one direction, reverses the field before taking the handoff. The guard and tackle from the fake side pull to block for the ball carrier, picking off defenders who think they're pursuing a play from behind. Plays made famous for the Redskins and Joe Gibbs. Course. The exact route the running back takes. The stretch course slants along the line of scrimmage toward the sideline. The pitch course runs parallel to the line of scrimmage before cutting upfield. The crossover step, kind of more commonly known in basketball, but it's the initial step for many runs outside the tackle. Step right with the left foot on the run right and step left with the right foot on a run left. The down block is a block thrown from outside across a defender's feet to cut off his pursuit angle as opposed to a straight-ahead block. Downhill, in scouting, it is a back with good body lean who attacks the line of scrimmage quickly. In coaching, it is the course that attacks the line of scrimmage hard as opposed to a course in which the ball carrier reads the defense or waits for his block. So when you hear things, you say, well, they didn't wait for his block. It's a downhill run. It was designed pre-snap that the read was pre-snap, that they had the right look in the attack downhill. So that's the reason why. Now, it doesn't always work, but that's the reason why you do it. Drop step is the initial short backward step used on many inside runs. Drop stepping with the foot opposite the direction of the play gets the ball carrier into better position to quickly attack the line of scrimmage. I like to call it the explosive index workout numbers. You add the broad jump, the vertical jump, the bench press, and if the number is 70 or more, it's a good explosive number. And I use this around draft time, scouting, you know, the combine. It's a good way to really get a feel for a guy's explosive numbers, and at least you know his explosive potential, and then you've got to determine his ability to do it on the field or not. Explosive play goals for an NFL defense. What I look for an NFL defense, again, we're looking at the amount of games they play. The goals that I'd like to have ideally for a defense, and it depends a little bit on certain styles, personnel, is 20 interceptions and 20 forced fumbles with a 60% recovery rate. That's what you're looking for an explosive play defense. We call something that we call fit position. You may hear that term. Maybe not as much, but we use a lot in football. Is the proper blocking stance is head up, butt down, knees bent, legs spaced, back flat. This is a must for fullbacks and pass protectors. We'll get into breaking down the techniques, the one technique, two technique, zero technique. But for alphabetical purposes, five technique is a defensive lineman that aligns with his nose on the outside shade of the offensive tackle with greater responsibility to stop the run than rush the passer. An ideal five technique is a guy that's going to be able to defend the run and be able to push the pocket a little bit from the outside. Flatten out is a term we use, a defender who turns in on the quarterback. Flow is two backs moving in the same direction at the snap. Freeze is, you might think, hesitation for one beat at the snap. It's a technique used in some options offenses and on draw plays, as defenders mistakenly think the ball carrier is preparing to pass block. That's what the freeze is designed for. Funnel is a hole or sweep or pitch created by a blocking corner towards the sideline while pinning other defenders inside. Handoff pocket is the correct hand and arm position for receiving the handoff. Inside arm should be up. The outside arm should be down with the palm up. You then close the inside arm downward over the ball and keeping your eyes downfield. No grabbing. You don't grab the football. You clamp down on it while keeping your eyes towards the defense. Hat level. We use that term. Term referred to how low a ball carrier keeps his helmet to maintain leverage and give defenders a smaller target. It includes running with their knees bent, feet properly spread, shoulder width apart, and good body lean. Ideally, the ball carrier should keep his helmet about 60 inches from the ground. High cut, high-waisted, having long legs and a short upper body. A hook block, action of an offensive lineman positioning himself in front of a defender and preventing him from getting outside, often done by a tight end on an outside backer. Jab step is a hard step at the start of a play in an opposite direction to what the ball carrier will run. Used to freeze defenders, keying on the running back, allowing blockers to get into better position. Often the first step is the counterplay. Jump cut is a sudden make-you-miss cutback in the open field. The ball carrier hops sideways to avoid the defender but must stay low to avoid leverage and expose the ball. Hugging the double team is a maneuver in which the ball carrier stays close to double team block to get into optimal position to find the hole and run to daylight. In knee action, pretty simple. Running style that requires pumping knees to generate power. It's most effective when running through the line of scrimmage. So those are some of them. We're going to continue with some of them tomorrow. We're going to move on to something else. We're going to continue with the rest of them on Thursday. Kind of, again, give you a feel for, you know, terminology that maybe will better in improve your ability to understand as we break down things. I want to talk to you a little bit before we answer so many questions. I often get referred to, people throw out stats. And listen, there's a term I believe in, not to be cute, but stats are like a bikini. What they reveal is very intriguing, intoxicating, but what they cover up is vital. Understanding what stats are really important as it relates to success on the football field is key. Stats are important if you know how to interpret them. They can be very, very misleading. So, listen, there are a number of things I look at statistically and off a film breakdown on how a player grades out, so on and so forth. But as a rule, some stats to keep in mind. One is turnover margin. Two, red zone efficiency. We're talking offensively and defensively. Three, number of explosive plays. Runs of more than 10 yards. Pass plays of more than 20 yards. And then fourth is third down efficiency. One of the things you're looking for in the NFL is the 50 total. And that's when the number of rushing attempts and pass completions equals 50. The teams win over 80% of the time. So you want to get that rushing attempts. When you're rushing the football and completing the football, you're winning. You're successful. Because you're running the football when you're having success. You're protecting a lead. It's really important to wear down a defense. All those things contribute greatly. And that's where the number total comes in. That number gives you a good indication of how you're wearing down an opponent's front and the ability to be able to throw the football effectively, complete passes, because they can't get off the snap. Two, they can't get off blocks to defend the run. So those are really important. College stats, they're a little bit different. Certainly turnover margin's key, but average yards per passing attempt is huge. Average rushing attempt, third down percentage, and then turnover margin. All those things are critical. You win three of those fours, you're going to win 80% of the time. Average yards per passing attempt is critical in college because it forces the defense to cover a certain part of the field as opposed to a smaller faction of the field. Really important to understand. Average number of rushing attempts, pretty obvious. Again, you got a lead, you're able to control the game. Third down percentage, turnover margin are important. Now, a couple of things to keep in mind. People like to talk about quarterback stats. Well, quarterback stats, people say, well, when? How do you win games? Well, no. Winning is a team and losing are a team-based statistic. I'm looking at accuracy percentage. That's number one. How accurate is he? Not completion percentage. Completion percentage is important, but it's an important overall team offensive statistic. It's not a quarterback statistic. I want accuracy percentage. Did he throw it where it's supposed to be? On time. So if it's a slant, is it 6 inches in front of the numbers to keep the receiver in stride? That's what he has to do. Now, if the receiver can't catch it in stride, that's his problem. You've got to make that adjustment there. But accuracy percentage on film grade is important. Yards per throw, touchdowns per throw, and interceptions per throw. That's important, critical data for quarterbacks. Now, if you're looking for teams, you know, like, for example, in the NFL, what are championship criteria statistics? One, points allowed. Two, defensive red zone efficiency. Three, offensive rushing attempts. Four, turnover margin. Five, defensive yards per passing attempt. These are important factors. Five critical factors that are going to determine your success as a team in terms of a championship caliber team or not. All right, want to answer some of your questions, but want to tell you about a great offer we've got. Someone that has expressed an interest in being part of the show, and folks, we've got a lot of great listeners, and a lot of you guys are males, and I know we got some great ladies out there that listen to the podcast, but for our guys here, we'll talk a little bit about your love life. Remember the days when you were always ready to go, and now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using the special promo code CODE, C-O-D-E. Just pay $5 for shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code CODE, C-O-D-E, and try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. We thank them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, answering some of your questions, Kevin asks, during the NFL football season, especially after a controversial play in a big game, say Super Bowl 49 for an example, obviously we're talking about the Seattle play call, throwing it, the airwaves are inundated with by play calling. He's mentioned, and I have, that I've addressed this in the past about the implicit bias and opinion surrounding play calling, and people see an unsuccessful play and attribute it to a play call, but again, they don't know about the execution of it. And he asks, what kind of expertise is needed objectively to evaluate play calling? And listen, I mean, Kevin, like in any other fan, folks are fair to criticize anything they want, and it's fair. But I know what you're pointing is, and it's a great question, and I applaud you for asking, hey, how do you know better? And here's a few things that you need to know that give you a better idea whether the play call is a good one or not. You know what the result is. Anybody can determine the result. The result is just that, the result. But in terms of evaluating play calling, you need to know not only the situation, down and distance, field position, score of the game, the flow of the game. Do you have a lot of momentum? Are you ready to put a team away? Are you struggling to find some answers? Are you having a hard time blocking their front? They're having an easy time blocking your front. They're struggling to block you, whatever. The success or lack thereof against a certain front or certain coverage. But you also need to know, for example, a play call. When you're looking at a play call and you're saying it's a good or bad, what was the front? Let's use offensive play calling because there are two different types of play calling, offense, defense, and certainly what you call on special teams. But people tend to focus more on offensive play calling. Most people don't criticize defensive play calling unless it's they blitz too much or they didn't blitz enough. That's about the extent of what people get into. They played prevent. I can't believe they played prevent. I can't believe they only rushed three. That's the only thing that they criticize. So most people talk about, and there are a lot more to that on defensive play calling. But we'll, for example, for this discussion, we'll talk offensive play calling because that's what you reference in Super Bowl 49, and that's what most people talk about. So when people say, I don't like the play call, I ask, what was the front in coverage? You know, somebody will say something, you know, about a game. I watched a game and, you know, say I hadn't seen the game. Well, what's the front or what's the coverage? Well, I don't know. Well, how can you criticize a play call if you don't know what the front and coverage was? That's like for you golfers out there. Somebody says, well, I hit a 7-iron. Well, how far is it to the hole? I don't know. I just hit the 7-iron. What do you mean? Did you hit 7-iron 160, 150? What I mean? Got to know the situation. Is there any wind? Where's the pin? Is it in the back? Is it in the front? Do you want to be short of the hole? Behind, you know, on top of the hole? You got to know the situation, right? If you run a play, let's say you call a running play, and you read, obviously, they've got extra guys in coverage. They've got their defensive front flexed out. and you feel you can run inside and you've got a good angle to block the three technique, the Mike backer's offset. I mean, that's they're inviting you to run. You got a great chance and you feel you can block it. Why is it a bad play call? It's the right play call. It's the thing that makes the sense. If you've got the right distance to the green and you hit the right club, it doesn't mean that you're going to make a good swing. But, you know, you got the right play call, you just don't execute it. So the answer to your question is you got to know the front and you got to know the coverage. You got to be able to go back and look at it and say, all right, why do they run? Now, for example, running against a loaded front, the defense reduces its front. They move their defensive lineman down towards the center, and you're trying to block that. That's not a bright play call. That's basically saying, I'm going to challenge my guys to block those guys, even though they got more guys to block than you got people to block them. That's not what I would call a prudent play call. But if you've got the numbers, the blocking advantage, well, that's a good play call. That makes a lot of sense. You're going to throw the ball into coverage when they've got more guys covering than you guys got out. Maybe you don't have enough guys healthy. You know, maybe it's not just healthy. Maybe it's you've got guys that are gassed. You've got you don't have enough receivers that can get open against this coverage, and you go in a pass formation, try to run the football because you feel you can get a block and you can get 4 yards and get the first down. It's not necessarily a bad play call. It's sometimes situational based upon your personnel that you have it, you know, available to you. And I'm talking personnel that is in a position to be successful, meaning a guy that's healthy and is fresh and can make a play for you. It could be dictated on that, but you've got to really know what the defense is doing and what you feel you can execute against them. What have you done against that front? What have you done against that pass? You know, here's the other thing. Fans get frustrated when, you know, what happens? Their team comes out running the football, right? 3 yards, 4 yards, 3.5 yards, 5 yards. It's great. And then your team starts throwing the football. Fans get frustrated. What the hell are you doing? You're running at 5 yards a pop, and now they throw. That's dumb play calling. No, it's not always dumb play calling. You run the football and start gashing a team 3 or 4 plays in a row. What is the defense going to do? They're going to adjust their front, right? They're going to put more numbers in there to stop it. Well, now you can continue to run against it. And if you do, and fans are going to say, well, you're going to it too much. Well, the reason why people tend to go away from that play call is because the defense makes the adjustment. So you have to adjust to that. Now they don't have as many guys in coverage. Now you got a guy one-on-one. Now you got an easy throw. You make a play. Understand that there's more to it. It's fine to criticize it if you feel it's just. Go look at the tape. Go see what the front is. Go see what the coverage is. I know it's hard off TV tape, but go and look at it best you can. Get a feel for what they're doing. Get a feel what the opposition is doing. That'll determine greatly and what your success rate is or lack thereof, and that'll determine a lot. So hope that gives you a little bit of an idea. Matt asks, was Charlie Strong given a raw deal at Texas? Considering how cleaned house and tore down to build it up, it seems that 3 years wasn't enough time. Who failed here? Asking about these administration. What's the red flag here? Can you set us straight? Well, let's go back. And first of all, you're correct. Charlie came in, and let's go back to Mac Brown. Love Mac Brown. Good friend. Known him since an assistant coaching days at Oklahoma, at LSU, before he even got his first head coaching job at Appalachian State. The program had become soft. It become a country club atmosphere, not very effective in that regard. They made a move with Charlie. Charlie did clean up the culture, made him tougher. I thought he did a lot of good things. There is no doubt that he wasn't seen as a quote-unquote fit by some of the boosters. Texas, in a world of college football that's very political with a lot of boosters, No one is more political. No one has more big time boosters than Texas. They have a roster of guys that give millions. And with that, they feel they run the program. And they feel their voice needs to be heard. And they demand that their voice be heard. And they speak whether they're spoken to or not. And they speak as if they're an owner of the program as opposed to a supporter. You had a problem with Charlie early. Red McCombs, most famously, was one of them. Listen, we can all speculate on whether it was racially motivated or not. He didn't like Charlie. He didn't think he was a good hire. And so you're fighting that. The biggest problem that Texas has had is that they've got too many cooks in the kitchen. They've not had the right person that could harness those great boosters who bring a lot to the table financially, but making sure that there's one voice to the program and that things are handled more behind the scenes. They haven't done that well. So that's the biggest problem. It is, if you look at the best jobs in the country, Texas would come up there in terms of resources. Look at all the recruiting resources. There is more money. They can print money. They can do anything and everything better than anyone. They make as much money or more than anybody. So you've got that. But you're having, there's a negative to that. You're having to deal with those guys, and they want to run things. And they all got big egos, and they all have different ideas of how it should be done and who's the guy and so on and so forth. Now, if you're asking me about the fit, listen, I don't think Charlie got a fair shake, but also know that Charlie had limitations as a coach too. Both can be true, and both are, and both are fair in my view. What I think is that Tom Herman is a better fit for a lot of these boosters. You know, you can throw that any way you want, but he was a Texas boy, graduate assistant there, had a lot of contacts. So he's kind of one of there. So you don't hear the fat cat guys talking negatively about Tom Herman as they did Charlie Strong in the early stages of both careers. Now, let Tom Herman not be successful, and you're going to hear the negativity come out again. I think the best thing that they can do there is hire a coach, a strong coach, that can control the operation and, you know, have somebody that can soothe the egos administratively with the money boosters, but basically tell them to keep quiet. You know, let me tell you this from the inside. Texas believed that they were going to go, and this is, again, the arrogance of Texas. They thought, their people thought they were going to get Nick Saban back when they ended up having to get their third or fourth choice in Charlie Strong. They felt like they were going to get Nick Saban. They never had a chance at Nick Saban. Now, Nick Saban and Jimmy Sexton, Nick's agent, used Texas to get an even better deal at Alabama. He had zero interest in Texas for the reasons that I mentioned. He's not going to put up with any nonsense from some fat cat booster that's going to be yapping and talking about his program. There's one voice for the program. Okay, and that's not going to happen. At Alabama, you have people that talk. You have Paul Bryant Jr., that's a very rich man, not only Bear Bryant's son, but a rich man for all of his money he's made in the concrete business. He's basically been muzzled at Alabama by Nick Saban. And we're talking about Paul Bryant Jr. is probably the most influential person at the University of Alabama. As a university, not just the athletic program, but you don't hear a peep out of them. That's the way Nick wants it, and that's the way it's going to be. And he was never going to leave for a job like Texas that is as disorganized as Texas has been. So hope that gives you a little bit of an idea. Also, Matt asked about, there are a lot of media types that say the Big 12 may break up in the future and the teams will eventually sell in other conferences. This will result in just four large power conferences, more teams instead of five. What do you see for the Big 12's future? Any other significant changes to the power conference in the next 15 years? Matt, the Big 12 is run by Texas. Okay. If Texas decides tomorrow that they're leaving, the Big 12 dissolves. Oklahoma will go with Texas or go somewhere else. Oklahoma will be Texas is the big mama duck, okay? And then Oklahoma is the big size sibling that's right behind the mama duck. And then all the other Big 12 schools are the little baby ducks that follow in a row, okay? If the big duck flies away, the second duck is going to fly away too, and all the little baby ducks are going to be on their own. They don't know where to go, don't know how to fly. That's the Big 12. That's where the if there is a problem, that's where the problem is with the Big 12. They're the low-hanging fruit because they're controlled by Texas. There will be a Big 12 as long as Texas decides they want to stay in the Big 12. If Texas gets an offer that they like better, they leave, the Big 12's done. Oklahoma leaves, and then it's, you know, the TCUs and the Oklahoma States and everybody else, they're just fighting for their own. Now, where will they go? Well, don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know that they will. Texas sees themselves as kind of a quasi-Notre Dame, that they can do their own thing. They've got their own television network. The Longhorn Network is funded probably the biggest mistake that ESPN's ever made financially. They're hemorrhaging money over that deal. But they get $30 million a year from that alone to Texas. Plus, they get a percentage of the Big 12 contracts that they get, which is far less. So they get far more money. Texas would want a lot of control, a lot of say-so. Texas really doesn't have an option anymore to go in the SEC. Conferences want to get television markets, not programs that look like people say, well, you know, Clemson looks like an SEC type of team. That would be a good move. It's not a good move in SEC's eyes. They already got the South Carolina market. Why do you think they went out and got Missouri? You think Missouri, you know, signals SEC to you? Of course not. Doesn't have anything in common with the SEC. But it brings the Kansas City and mainly the St. Louis markets. So as teams would leave, where would Texas go? I think they were very close to going to the Pac-12 years ago. And had that happened, this is Texas and Oklahoma rumor. And it was actually about 48 hours away from happening. And then it fell apart. So in the next 15 years, Matt, I don't know. That's a long time. I could absolutely see that happening, that Texas would leave. And if they left, you would have four mega conferences. And what you would have then is the conference champions play in the playoffs. Maybe they would go to six and maybe they would give two at-larges. But that's how it would play out eventually. But I don't know. I don't know. The time frame, if you asked me in 15 years, is there going to be a Big 12? I'd say probably not. But again, if Texas doesn't find a deal that they're comfortable with, they stay in the Big 12. All those other conferences, all those schools in the Big 12, they're going to hang in there. And it's not about how good they are or whatever. Let me put it this way. Texas doesn't care about anybody but Texas. So they're not going to be on the lookout for Oklahoma State or TCU or Iowa State or anybody else. But really comes down to what's best in their eyes for them. Matt also asks, I appreciate the questions, Matt. Can you explain the history of SMU football, how great they became, how they became successful, and how they eventually fell and its impact on college football? Can they ever achieve their former glory, in your opinion? Well, SMU football goes back long way to Doak Walker days, in the Southwest Conference days. The Southwest Conference is, there was a point in time where the Southeast and the Southwest Conference were as good as it got in college football. They were right there with the SEC, the Big Ten. I mean, they were as good as it gets. Every school was from Texas, except Arkansas. And SMU was dominant. They were a power. As it grew into a little bit of a lull, Hayden Fry kind of brought it back, but there was a little bit of a lull in the program. And as you know, and this is what you're referring to probably in recent history, it got back in the 70s and the 80s. There were a lot of big-time boosters. One was the governor of the state of Texas at the time that put a lot of money. The oil boom in the 70s led to, hey, we want to do everything better and bigger in Texas. It led to them buying a lot of players at SMU. As a recruiter in the SEC at that time, SMU was buying players and doing things that would make your head spin. For the teams that cheated, that bought players, they couldn't compete with what SMU was doing. It was that bad, or that good, however you want to look at it. They were, of course, they got caught, and they got caught again, and they were warned, didn't stop, continued to do it, and they got the death penalty. Now, the death penalty ruined the program, but also what ruined the program more is as they came back, there was no conference because the Southwest Conference folded, and SMU obviously is not a part of that. Can SMU come back to that glory? No, they can't because they're no longer in a big-time football conference. If SMU did not achieve the death penalty and SMU would have been one of those teams that got into the Big 12, then SMU could be – there's no reason why SMU couldn't be what TCU is right now or better. They have the resources to do it, had the resources to do it, but they lost it. The reason why Central Florida is yapping and South Florida is yapping and Boise, you know, is because they're good programs that don't have, they're not in a power conference. So they're not going to be relevant in the big player in college football. No one is until you're in a big conference. And that future is not on the table for SMU. Because they did things so poorly, because they did things in such a corrupt fashion, what happened to the program is when it got the death penalty, it hurt the university big time. It hurt the enrollment. It hurt the image. It hurt everything. And while they're quote-unquote recovered to some degree, they're never going to go back to being that type of a program, nor will they ever get their standing back where they can. There are not enough people in the modern era that wants to put the type of money into the SMU program to compete with the big-time program. So the answer is no. The oil boom drop is a negative impact. The death penalty, you know, fallout still there. But all of that led to them not being in a power league. If you're not in a power league, you're not going to play big-time football. Okay, folks, I've gone a little bit over today. I'm going to finish. I'm going to get to some of the running back units on Thursday show, and we'll continue with that going forward. Want to finish with the rest of the story. And as we're kind of talking about SMU, and we're talking about big-time programs, and probably no one cheated and got caught to the degree that SMU did. I'm going to take you back to probably, and the Southwest Conference was bad with SMU, but probably the worst in terms of cheating as a league, took place in the Big 12, excuse me, the Big 8, when it was the Big 8. Nebraska had the upscale sugar daddy boosters. You know, Oklahoma had its rich oil man. Coors was helping the Colorado program get built up with Chuck Fairbanks. Missouri had the Bush money, the Anheuser-Busch money. Iowa State had Johnny Majors, who was one of the more aggressive violators, and his chief assistant was a guy by the name of Jackie Sherrill. They left Iowa State to go to Pitt and continued that style of recruiting. But believe it or not, all of those programs were bad, and Oklahoma State was always really bad, but the Kansas and Kansas State programs were probably the biggest rogue street recruiters. They probably violated the rules more than anybody. And a good buddy of mine, Ellis Rainsberg, had just gotten a job as an assistant coach at Kansas State. He hit the road recruiting, immediately tried to sign the top running back in the state of Kansas. By the way, Bud Adams, owner of the Oilers, I was with the Oilers. He was a Kansas grad. He's from Bartlesville, Oklahoma, but he went to Kansas. And he used to ask me every year about, well, Kansas program, how they're doing. But even to his dying day, used to give money every year for them to buy at least a player or two. It was kind of the running joke. I buy a player every year. It was his whole thing. He put money in it. But anyway, going back to Ellis is on the road recruiting, trying to sign that top running back from the state of Kansas. The kid told him that he liked Kansas State, but that Kansas had offered him a car. Ellis hadn't even gotten a home yet. Went back to the hotel, called the assistant commissioner of the Big Eight, who's a good friend of his. It was about 10:30, 11 at night. And Ellis asked him, he said, told him that the recruit said that Kansas offered him a car. The assistant commissioner, kind of groggy, said, Ellis, don't be calling me late at night with stuff like this. You guys got your car guy, too, as the rest of the story is told in the Big Eight recruiting in those days. Hey, appreciate you joining us today. We'll be back Thursday for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast. We'll have another story, some more X's and O's terminology, look at the running backs, units in college football, answer your questions, a lot more going on in football. Be sure to check out our summer savings special at LandryFootball.com. If you're not yet a member, folks, do so. You can get a 50% discount on any subscription package by using the coupon code SUMMER. Do it today. Get the football season locked up at the lowest rate and get all the off-season information, all the previews and roster analysis. A lot of stuff coming up even for our NFL fans. A depth chart analysis, scouting reports on players from last year heading into this year. Got it all for you at LandryFootball.com. Don't be the guy that misses out or the gal that misses out. Join today. Get your 50% discount. Talk to you Thursday, folks.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Aaron Donald is actually, for the Rams, is sitting out looking for another contract. I think I heard a statistic that he had 20 more pressures than any other interior lineman last year. You put on film and the kid can just flat out play. And they're talking about making him the highest paid, you know, defensive player in the league. I think he might be the most dominant player out there. I'd have to give Khalil Mack a couple of nods. And even with his getting on in age, Luke Kuechly is a fantastic football player at linebacker. So he's one of the top three, four defensive players in the whole league. So you're going to have to pay him. He's a young kid. He makes everybody around him better. And the Rams are just going to have to come out of pocket, that's for sure.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.